Welcome to the Cooler Conversations Podcast, the audio culmination of cool stories and the coolest people. If you're new to the podcast, welcome. If you're not so new, welcome back. And if I'm welcoming you back, please be sure to leave us a review. Hit us up on the social media pages. Let me know what you think about the show. Guys, today we are talking some crazy, crazy stories. 2,193 miles stretching across the entire eastern United States, hitting 10 out of the 13 original colonies. I am, of course, talking about the Appalachian Trail, or the AT. On average, 3,000 people attempt the through hike, the entire AT, or, you know, you want to call it the Appalachian, you call it the AT. I'm trying to sound super professional with this. Only a quarter of them actually complete it in about 6 to 7 months. Today's guest recently completed the AT in 178 days. That's just shy of that six-month mark, and she is here to tell us all about it. This is Jessica Poppy. What's up, Jessica?
Hi, how are you? I'm so excited to be here.
Thank you so much. I just want to go ahead and say, this is one of those things that has been on my bucket list for the absolute longest time. So, we talked before the show, I have probably more questions than any average Joe Schmo, because this is like me mentally prepping myself for potentially down the road doing it. So
I love that. I love it.
You are definitely right now my hero. So big congratulations on completing it.
Thank you so much. It feels crazy because it definitely was on my bucket list for a long time too. And then of course 2020 happened and I decided to postpone my through hike, and then I didn't know if I really wanted to do it or not. And then 2021 happened and I started out with like a little section hike. I did the first 100 miles and really met like the most badass, amazing people. And I was like, you know what? I'm quitting my jobs and I'm coming out here.
So you quit your job. That was one of my first questions here. So let's back it all the way to, I guess it would be 2019, because you planned it for 2020 originally.
Yeah.
What prompted you to commit to this challenge? Because it's huge amount of time, huge amount of resources. What was it?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like unless you actually do it, you really don't know how long 6 to 7 months is until you're actually out there doing the same exact thing for 6 to 7 months. It really feels like you're just planning like a couple week long trip, you know? Mm-hmm. But then I think really deciding to make that commitment to go and do it, it was not an easy task by any means. I really had to plan it all out, had to really feel if this was something I was passionate about. And I mean, long story short, I really felt like this is exactly where my heart needed to go. So in 2019, I told my jobs, I'm working pretty much full time for something that you and I both love. It's an obstacle course race called Savage Race. Mm-hmm. And I've been working for them for about 5 years now. And, you know, all of my jobs and my passions really are in the health and fitness industry. And so I say that I quit, but it was more so like a temporary like leave of absence, if you will. They were fully supportive of it because, I mean, it fits the core guidelines of what we're all about, like being savage, getting outside, doing something with your friends, you know, getting dirty in the mud. That's what we're all about. And so in 2019, I decided to really save and pinch every penny that I had to go ahead and save as much as I could. And that way, at the end of 2019, I was fully committed and told my jobs, like, hey, this is something I really want to do. And they were fully supportive about it.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was one thing I noticed is you kind of went through just all the way back. You went through kind of a rebrand personally. It was on your Instagram. You went from like more of a fitness and then it went to like taps and trails. So I didn't know if there was a correlation between those two.
I feel like, so I did do bodybuilding. So my background in general, way back, it goes from being like bodybuilder, really focused on your outer appearance and, you know, getting super tan and lean and, you know, muscles and getting up on stage to compete at a bodybuilding show. And that was more so like where my, you know, brand was more of like bodybuilding shows. Mm-hmm. And then I decided, okay, this is not sustainable lifelong. So I went through a lot to try to find out like where my passions were. And then I found the sport of obstacle course racing. competed in that for many, many years. I went to OCR World Championship. I went to London. I went to Canada to compete in my age group. And I really, really loved that. And then I started working with Savage Race. And I felt like running was really becoming my adventure for me. And then, of course, running is a slippery slope. You start with a 5K and then it goes to 10K marathon. And then you're like, ooh, I can push my body really past its limits and I can do an ultra marathon. I can run 45 miles. Like, that sounds crazy. And so it just really became like, well, what else can my body do? Can I walk for 6 months? Can I walk the whole like Eastern United States? And that's eventually what I did.
Wow. Well, so yeah, it's just like a domino effect. It seemed it just one yeah. led into the other. So, yeah. so let's go to 2019. Like what is, I don't think people appreciate, because I went through a whole YouTube binge not too long ago. I was watching like Julia Sheehan's videos.
Love her.
Couple other, and I was just like into it. So what was there like a time frame where you were just like building up like your prep, equipment, like what is the savings, all of that?
Yeah, I feel like probably like half of 2019 was really when I was like digging deep and like trying to pinch every penny and was really on my own YouTube binges. And actually, Julia Rocket, she became like one of my mentors. And of course, we know him. We know Darwin on the Trail and Jessica Mills, Dixie, Homemade Wanderlust, like all of them are big names on YouTube. And so I just started like DMing them and sliding into the DMs and just basically harassing them to be like, tell me everything. Like, what gear should I get? And I really mimicked a lot of my own personal, like first hiking kit, backpacking kit off of Rocket. And, you know, God bless her. She like really was trying to help me out and get me on point. And I eventually used everything, around 2020, because then COVID happened. So then I'm like, well, you know, I really need to get some miles under my belt anyways. And so I would do little section hikes close to home. And yeah, and then I just really in 2020 as well, I felt like, you know what, I'll just save even harder this year. That way I can like ball out in 2021.
Absolutely. So is there a certain amount that you would need? Like what are some staple equipments that you needed from the beginning? What is like, I mean, 6 to 7 months on the road, no work. I mean, what's the savings look like? That's a lot.
Yeah. So I would say like for gear, your big three is what they call it, is your backpack, your sleeping quilt, and your tent. And so those are the big three. Those are the three that like you absolutely need. And those are the most that are like the most expensive. And this time actually right now, depending on when this podcast airs, you know, Black Friday time, holidays time, all these companies, you know, they're doing a lot of sales. And so I would take advantage now in order for the future to save as much as you can on your gear, as well as, you know, you don't need brand new gear. I think a lot of social media makes you think that you need like brand new sparkling, shining equipment. And I mean, you don't. You need something that works and something that is efficient. So, you know, if your first backpacking kit is your base weight, which is basically your big three items, if that is, you know, a little bit on the heavier side, meaning like 10 to 15 pounds, then so be it. You know, you can always save money and kind of work yourself down. And then as far as in your savings, I mean, they say, you know, they meaning like the majority of the community would say that you would need about $1,000 per month of money saved in order to have a successful through hike. Now, of course, you can do it on less, which I wouldn't really advise, but then you can do it on way more. Me, I was definitely way on the higher end because I'm what they call a quote unquote platinum blazer, meaning that whenever you're in town, you're going to stay at nicer places. You're going to, you know, maybe take a couple more zeros or rest days and truly enjoy the town and make it like a, you know, pilgrimage across the country instead of just like hiking and staying in the woods the whole time. So I definitely like balled out when I was in town.
Absolutely. I was just thinking, so you're setting up basically planning a trip for an entire 6 to 7 months. So obviously you're starting it. When did you start?
So I started March 31st, I believe, 2021.
Okay, so you're going so March 31st in the mountains is typically cold. So how do you prep your clothes? Did you bring all your clothes the entire way? Did you ship things back? How?
Right. Yeah, so in the beginning I think I did start with my 10 degree sleeping quilt. So I have two. I have one that is 30 degrees and one that is 10 degrees. As well as I did start with a sleeping bag liner that you put inside, and it says it's supposed to add around another 15 degrees. So I had my 10 and then a 15. So math is hard, but like, what is that? Like -5 or something. Mm-hmm. So I had, you know, a temperature rating, comfortability rating on my quilt that was about -5. But I think the coldest I had in that first 100 miles was probably 19 degrees. Wow. And yeah, and we did sleep in the shelters. And so you become quick friends really fast with people out there because you're basically like huddling together like in a shelter.
Was your first like week in the cold, like your first actual like cold week, was this just like, what the hell am I doing? What is this?
Kind of, yeah. But I did a couple shakedown hikes. So a shakedown hike is basically when you pack everything that you need and then you do the trip, maybe 20 miles, 30, 40 miles. Mm-hmm. And at the end of that trip, you're like, all right, I don't need this. I don't need that. I don't need this. So you shake down your gear. So I did a couple of those shakedown hikes, but I mean, I did them in Florida in February of 2020.
Gotcha.
And so actually in Florida around February, I mean, some nights can get in like the 30s. And so I kind of, you know, based it upon that. And, you know, if it gets down even a couple more degrees than 30, all you got to really do is add in a couple more hot hands or, you know, maybe another layer of socks or sleep with your mittens and stuff like that.
Gotcha. So
layers are important.
Yeah. So let's go more towards the, because I have a ton of questions here. So starting off, did you go into it like a little bit cocky? Did the trail break you down at some point? Like what was your thoughts going in versus, because I think probably the hardest part would probably be about 4 months in. So what's the difference?
Yes.
What's the difference? Yeah. In mental?
Oh man. I mean, so many answers I could say. So I definitely would say in the beginning, I kind of did feel cocky, like I won't lie, because I mean, I was coming off of being a bodybuilder, being an ultra marathoner, being an athlete. And here I was, you know, doing this next task. And I'm like, hell yeah, I'm going to crush it. I'm going to feel like so good and confident. And in that first 100 miles, I truly did. I pretty much started out doing 11 to 16 miles. And in that first 100 mile stretch, people are averaging like 9. Gotcha. To kind of like test out their gear, because a lot of people kind of are coming like couch to through hike instead of like couch to 5K. They're really like really going out of the bounds here. And me, I felt more confident. So maybe not cocky, because I wasn't like around camp like, oh, none of you guys are going to finish and I am. Like I wasn't cocky like that, but I was truly confident. I truly, you know, I did the work. I tested out my gear. I did what I needed to do in order to come out there. But then, oh yeah, I mean, I felt like I was at my peak performance really in those first 2 months. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there is that curve of diminishing effect here when it's like you start out really strong and I didn't have much weight to lose. I was pretty lean. And then, yeah, going into that 4 month, 5 month, 6 month stretch, I was exhausted. I was so depleted. I was so exhausted and tired. I was moody. I was grumpy a lot. The trail really broke me down. I mean, even in Virginia is like the fifth state, I believe, but that state only is 550 miles. Wow. Of the 2000 miles. It's 550. Like just going through there, it feels like that was my entire trip. I was there for almost a month and a half just in Virginia.
Holy cow.
And yeah. And so, I mean, just being in Virginia that long, I mean, it wears you down because you're just like, oh my gosh, like I'm not making any progress. I'm still in this same damn state. Like, when am I ever going to leave Virginia? And finally, whenever you cross into West Virginia and then Maryland and then Pennsylvania, your steam is just like, hell yeah, let's go.
That's insane. This is nothing related to the trail, but we have family in PA, and I always have the same feeling driving through Virginia. It's like, why are we still in Virginia?
Oh, but that's like Texas. It literally is like a year to get through Texas. My God. Such a long state.
So this is more, I guess, minutia then. So what did your average day-to-day look like?
Yeah, so I would wake up. I mean, on a good day, I would wake up like 6 to 7. I was not like one of those early, early risers. I mean, there's some people at camp that wake up at like 3 and then they're going at like 4. That was definitely not me. Yeah, oh, of course. So I would wake up like 6 or 7. I'd, you know, make my breakfast, which would usually just be like oatmeal and some type of like vegan protein powder, like dairy free. I did try to keep my diet like somewhat okay on trail as much as it could be. And then I would just start hiking. I mean, I would check, it's an app called Far Out Guides. It used to be called Gut Hook Guides. And the app itself is free, but you do have to purchase the trail that you're on. And so I would just check that, kind of look ahead to see where the water sources were, you know, where a camp spot might be, maybe, you know, a good lunch spot view, like if there was a view or vista coming up, and basically just start walking. And I would just walk and walk and walk. And then until I get hungry, eat a couple snacks here and there, stop by lunch, eat a couple snacks, get some water, filter water. It was just very mundane, very the same thing every single day. But like there was a beauty in the natural just kind of order of just walking.
Absolutely.
And yeah. And then we would set up camp, set up the tent, and just call it a day. And if we had signal, you know, maybe sometime like watch something on Netflix or have something downloaded on like Disney Plus and watch some Disney cartoons and just try to clear your mind and get ready for the next day.
Yeah. So with that, were you, because I guess my question is there any part of it where you were just like, I mean, I would, this is just speaking for me. I mean, was there any boredom, like just like walking?
Yeah, I definitely would say there would be some days. I mean, especially in some days in, I mean, Pennsylvania, I mean, some days were pretty just like mundane. Some days in Virginia where like there really wasn't any like views or vistas coming up. You just kind of had to keep yourself busy. I mean, listening to music during the day helps, but I really tried to not do that so much during the day. One, to preserve battery, but two, just to like actually feel the nature around me and try to like listen to the birds in the morning and have them be my alarm clock. But yeah, I mean, just like anything, I mean, if you're at work, you know, some things are boring. If you're sitting at home, some things are boring. So I mean, that aspect still happens out on trail, but you just kind of have to think like, wow, I'm so privileged and I'm so lucky and I'm so thankful that I'm actually out here able to do this. And thinking about all the people who maybe are at a 9-to-5 that they don't like, and people who are, you know, in a home environment that's toxic, and how lucky I am to be able to, you know, have the support that I do. So it's like, even if boredom out there beats boredom at a job any day.
Yeah, I can.
Yeah.
I can attest.
Yeah.
One thing I was going to ask, I've talked with a few guests about this. We've all flirted with the idea of just like disconnecting. Were there any days where you just like unplugged from the world and it was just trail?
Oh, yeah. I mean, a majority of the time out there. I mean, I did still have to keep my mom updated. And so, I mean, I would do that kind of all at the same time, like just by posting a picture on Instagram, just to kind of like have my own little document of, you know, okay, I'm alive. And just so my friends and family can see that I'm alive. But I mean, definitely that was my favorite part about being out on trail. And I mean, honestly, if there was any huge, I mean, this might be ignorant as my, like as well, but if there was any huge political or environmental or any sort of like drama that happened this year, I literally have no idea about it because I was out in nature and I didn't really have signal a lot of the time. And even if I did have signal, I just would put my phone on airplane mode and would just be in the woods walking instead of listening to the news or listening to the drama of the country. And I would just keep walking and try to like tune it all out.
My God, that right there just convinced me.
Yeah, like it's insane. I mean, but then I mean on the other token, it's like it's hard whenever you come back home and then all this information is hitting you at once. It's just like, hold on, like slow down.
Oh my God, yeah. Lord. How many hours a day would you say was like divided, like if you were to box up your hours, like how many hours was spent like resting, walking, eating?
I would say, I mean, eating was like eating and walking was number one. Okay. If I wasn't walking, I was eating. And if I wasn't eating, I was walking. Sometimes I would be doing both at the same time. But otherwise, it was just like wake up, eat, hike, sleep, repeat. Just daily, daily, daily. I would say we would hike pretty much from like 7, 8 a.m. until like 7, 8 a.m. at night. And in the spring and in the summertime, I mean, we were able to hike up until like 9:30 at night sometimes with like the dusk because of the longer days. We would be able to hike for hours, like even into the night, and then put up our headlamp and even get in, you know, another 5 or 6 miles in the dark if we really wanted to push a long day. But I mean, definitely in the winter time and later on, or like in the later fall up north, I mean, the sun just started setting earlier and earlier, and we had to wake up early in order to even get 10 miles for the day.
Wow. Okay. So these next two questions were probably the most asked when I was like, hey, we're doing a podcast with someone who just completed the AT. they fit right into the minutia of the day. So we'll start with the nice one, and we'll end with the one that me and you already know it's going to be the question. So,
okay.
what were the go-to like foods that did you splurge at all? Was it like, hey guys, I'm having a pizza. Domino's is dropping off up there.
Yeah. So I would say ramen noodles. That was like the most, you know, thing that I would eat on trail, like dinner every single night for almost 200 days. Like, was good old ramen noodles. My favorite are the chili and soy flavors. ramen on trail. And then, I mean, definitely you can't beat a pizza, like whenever you get into town. But I mean, I don't do any dairy, so I would always just have to be like, no dairy. And then all my trail family members would be like, you're crazy. You're not eating any dairy. And then, I mean, Pop-Tarts. I love me some Pop-Tarts on trail. Ice cream whenever I get off trail. And I mean, you got to love a good old beer. You know, it's just like the same thing as completing a long run, you know, like, or doing a race or doing a Savage race or Spartan race or what have you. It's like at the end, you get a beer. Well, I'm doing a race like that every single day. And so it's like, you know, you still crave those things. And yeah, getting into town and finding like a beer, like a brewery or like a tavern or restaurant or something, or even going down to like the little package stores that they have up north and just getting like a 6-pack and just sitting around the fire. It's like, it's kind of like vacation every day. But then again, it's like, it's hard work every day.
Absolutely. I have a friend who runs ultra marathons, and she told me that they're really, I imagine this is the same thing. There's no such thing as like a cheat meal. You just need the calories.
Yeah. Very, very valid. And I mean, now coming into the real world, I have to be like, all right, dude, you can't stay here and like eat a whole bag and a half of like potato chips. Like, you know, I'm not burning that many anymore. So definitely the transition is hard. But yeah, I mean, when I was running ultras and whenever I did my first marathon and training, oh yeah, I mean, like no food was pretty much off limits. Like you needed those calories. And that was definitely the same thing while through hiking.
Absolutely. This isn't a question, now that's making me think, was there any points where, like, you know, you knew that you didn't eat enough that day, you were starting to feel a little down? Like, how does that?
Oof. Yeah, I would say this was either a mix of food, probably, but, and a mix of water more specifically. This was in Virginia. This was right after the Priest Mountain. There's like this really infamous shelter called the Priest Shelter where people like confess their trail sins. Like, I didn't dig a hole for my poop today. Like, really, like, like sins. And so we finished that climb, and it was the heat of summer, and we were starting the next climb up. It's called Three Ridges. It's like three really high peaks that you have to climb consecutively. And we were coming down off of the Priest, and we were starting this climb. And I looked at my boyfriend now that I met on trail, actually.
Oh, nice.
I was talking to him, and I was like, I don't feel good. And he's like, yeah, you kind of look like shit. And I'm like, well, like, what do we do? And he's like, I think you have heat exhaustion. And it was a mix of like the heat, the water, not eating enough, and sweating a shit ton. And I just felt awful. And I started getting really dizzy and lightheaded. And I know what that feels like, because again, of my bodybuilding background, because when I was bodybuilding, I would have those moments all the time of like, you know, being super dizzy. And so I started having that while while I was climbing up the mountain. And that is a really bad place to be whenever you start to feel like that. Because, I mean, it's either like you have to crush those next 5 miles to get up and down over the mountain, or you just have to like, you know, take one for the team and you have to turn around to get to safety. So we ended up turning around. We ended up having to hike back like 2 or 3 miles to get to a road crossing. We got to call one of the hostels that were around the corner, and it was like a $50 shuttle for them to like come pick us up. That way we could like go get in the air condition.
Wow.
Holy yeah, cow. That was probably one of my lowest moments on trail.
So, man, now you got me into a fork in the road. I got multiple questions on everything. Let's stick with the adversity here. What other adversity moments? Did you have any like scary moments, like mental yeah. breakdowns, injuries?
Yeah, both, all three actually. Okay. it's the trifecta. So we'll talk about the injury first because that one happened first. This was in Hampton, Tennessee, and I was hiking. I just left a hostel called Boots Off Hostel. Shout out to them; they were amazing. I ended up having to stay there for I did stay there for 8 days. And because I was hiking out, I took a 0 day there, like rested up. I went kayaking. It was a beautiful day, and then camped. And then the next morning I hiked out, and I had about a 15 mile day planned. I was at mile 11 out of 15, and I rolled my ankle at like being stupid. I don't even know what I did. I was on flat ground, and there was one small pebble the middle of the trail. And that one small pebble like ruined my life for 8 days. I like cracked my left ankle, and it swelled up like a freaking tire, and it was black and blue. And I actually called Hunter, and he came and picked me up, and he literally had to carry me like 5 miles back the other way in order to drive me to the hostel because my left ankle was completely sprained and I couldn't walk on it for 8 days.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So thankfully that was my only trail injury, but that one got me good. I mean, that one, I seriously thought that I had to get off trail. I thought I was done. And that was really, really depressing. But I just kept telling myself like, no, you know, sit here and heal this thing, you know, get an ankle brace. And I ended up wearing that ankle brace for about 600 miles in order to heal like the instabilities in my ankle. But I finished the thing and had an injury to tell the story, but
I would say, yeah, is your ankle fine now?
Yeah, it is. Thankfully, yeah, it is. I'm still able to hike on it and run on it if I want to. And yeah, I mean, it's perfectly fine.
Okay. So we checked off one out of three.
Yeah. Okay. And then the low moments and scary moments. Oh my gosh. So the two words is Mahoosuc Notch. That section is dubbed the quote unquote hardest mile of the AT. It is located in southern Maine. And it's like, as soon as you hit Maine, you're like, oh my gosh, I just hiked Georgia to Maine. Maine is still about 200 miles long. So, you know, you hit Georgia to Maine and you're like, oh my gosh, I am so close to being done. And then you're like, hold up, you still have 200 more miles. So you get to southern Maine, and it is by far the hardest section of the entire trail. So you know, you've hiked 2,000 miles and now you're finally ready to get in to the nitty gritty. And they say you've hiked about, you know, almost 90% of the miles, but you've only done like 10% of the work. Wow. Because southern Maine will like kill you. It's really, really, really hard. And we got to this section called Mahoosuc Notch, and it's like a jungle gym of rocks, and some are like 10, 15, 20 feet up high, and you really have to like watch your footing. And there are a lot of places to kind of like grab and kind of lower yourself down, but you have to remember you're carrying maybe 20, 30 pounds on your back. So, you know, coming through this little jungle gym of rocks is terrifying. It took me 3.5 hours to move this 1 mile.
Oh my Lord.
Yeah. So there were moments of, oh my gosh, I don't think I'm going to make it out of here. Like, why is it taking so long? Moments of where I had to literally take off my backpack and like throw it down 10 or 15 feet in order to make it successfully across this, you know, winding little rocky path, because I felt that if I had it on, it was going to throw me off. And just really terrifying moments. I probably had about 3 or 4 mental breakdowns of like screaming, crying, like anxiety just in that 1 mile.
Was it steep?
It wasn't steep. It was actually relatively flat, if not more like slowly coming down, but it wasn't like you weren't even hiking. You weren't even walking. It was straight up rock climbing with 30 pounds on your back. It was, you know, lowering yourself down and kind of crawling through these really small, tiny, claustrophobic inducing, like, little holes that you had to get through even with your backpack. So you kind of had to take your backpack off and like squish it through and then kind of follow through. If anyone wants to do that section, definitely do it as just a day hike and bring a friend because it's pretty scary.
I'm just imagining like the way you were describing it. I don't know if you watched Lord of the Rings, but it was just,
yeah, of course.
It was, I was imagining just Frodo and Sam and Gollum just going up the steps.
Yeah. Yeah. Literally there were moments where we're like, oh, they filmed Lord of the Rings here. Like I know it.
Oh my Lord. So that, does that not, so that's like mentally and scary all in one.
Yeah, definitely. God. I mean, yeah, it's terrifying. I mean, I think we did like 2 or 3 miles before we even got to that section. And then that section, we entered it maybe like 3 or 4 PM. And whenever we were coming out of it, like the sun was setting and we were like, oh my gosh, like we're going to get stuck in here like before the sun goes down. And I mean, thankfully it was dry in there and there wasn't, you know, rain like a couple of days beforehand. Mm-hmm. But I mean, God forbid if it were to be in there, if we were to be in there while it was raining, there might even be another injury story to tell because I mean, it's truly terrifying. And I think we had only done maybe 6 miles that day and we were insanely pooped and we had to sleep. Like as soon as we exited that little Mahoosic Notch area, mm-hmm. there's a campground on either side of that 1 mile because people sometimes take all day to do just that 1 mile.
Gotcha. Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
So now the second part of my fork there, I wasn't going to ask this, but now that you had mentioned it, so was there any pink blazing on the trail?
So yeah. So for people listening, so pink blazing, it's like a slang term. I guess it's for when a girl or a guy like finds a love interest and then they kind of like match their pace, like either slow down or speed up in order to kind of like stay with this like specific love interest. So, I mean, definitely there was that. I mean, I feel like it happens a lot out on trail. I mean, you're out there for 6 or 7 months. And so, I mean, it's kind of easy to kind of like connect with people out there anyways and build these amazing friendships because you're out there doing the same thing with each other and you guys have this amazing but also kind of crazy idea of like, let's quit our jobs and go hike for 7 months. Like that's mm-hmm. a very specific niche of people. So yeah. So, I mean, I knew my boyfriend now. I knew him like just through Instagram for the past couple years. And then I finally met him. There is like this big festival in Damascus, Virginia that happens like the middle of May. And it is an epic, wild, crazy hiker fest that happens out there every year. And I met him out there and then he decided that he wanted to through hike too. And so he got on trail with me pretty much shortly after that. And we did the whole rest of the trail together.
Nice. Okay. So there was there wasn't like a whole lot of section then that you were by yourself or was the first half you were?
Yeah. So I would say definitely the first half I was, but yeah, definitely. And then that second half, him and I worked together the whole time. But I mean, we wouldn't like hike together the whole time. Like sometimes I would go ahead, sometimes he would go ahead. But yeah, I mean, we were always at camp together as well as, you know, different trail family and friends that you meet out there. We always like to camp, you know, at least around some people.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, I skipped over this one and I got to go back to it. This was this was the number one question when That's I crazy. Asked people is, where did you go to the bathroom?
Yeah. So Leave No Trace is a principle of cleaning up your garbage, you know, leaving no trace just for the environment. And so Leave No Trace principles. They're very, very detailed when it comes to that situation. But at the same time, you got to go when you got to go. But typically, you know, you pee and poop right there on trail. you know, make sure you do it away from water sources. And when it comes to going number two, you have to take a trowel, which is just like a little lightweight shovel, or like a stick or your trekking pole. I ended up ditching my trowel probably day number two because I'm like, eh, I don't need this thing. And so as long as you dig a hole, it's called a cat hole. Mm-hmm. And it has to be, you know, so many inches and so many, you know, inches wide and deep. And as long as it's deep enough, as long as, you know, if someone were to come across it, they're not going to dig into your own poop. But so, yeah. And you just squat over it and you just let it rip.
What about the wiping? Or are you guys just lucky enough there was no wipes?
No, you got to bring wipes. Gotcha. Yeah. So I think, yeah, wipes were like the number one thing that we would always have to resupply on. We would go through like one, you know, little container of baby wipes, you know, per resupply per mm-hmm. like 3 or 4 days. Cause at the end of the day, you kind of, I call it PTA, pits to it's an ass. You just mm-hmm. kind of wipe, you wipe like every little bit of you, and then you use it for going to the bathroom too.
Oh my God. I'm just imagining it just being currency on the trail. Just I got
oh
it.
Yeah. Yeah. They call it, what is Darwin on the trail? He calls it shit tickets. Shit is what he calls like toilet paper and wipes are your shit tickets.
That is hilarious. So like, I'm just a mad. So what's funny is, it wasn't the Savage Race, but I've seen it at the Spartan Beast, as I've seen people like it. I guess 13 miles is too long to hold. They run out. They run out like not even far enough because everyone just see it. So were you just like out in the middle? People are like, oh, that's person right over there.
So sometimes that does happen. I mean, it really just depends on like what the terrain is. So yeah, I mean, if you kind of look up ahead a couple miles, like on the up and you're like, oh my gosh, we have a really big climb. Like, let me try to like go to the bathroom now instead of like while I'm climbing. But sometimes, I mean, it doesn't happen that way. I mean, the worst time. So we were in Salem, Virginia, and we ended up eating some cheese pizza. And again, I don't do dairy. And so needless to say, that next day it came back to haunt me. And so there's a really famous spot called McAfee's Knob, and there are tons and tons and hundreds of day hikers probably every day of the year that go out there. And so I had just ate that cheese pizza the night before, and we're hiking up, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like I need to go right now. And so there's like families and kids and every dogs and, you know, wildlife all around. And I'm like, I have to go right now. And so I did my best to kind of like go off trail and kind of like hide around. But oh yeah, I mean, I'm sure a couple of families walked past me and like my boyfriend kind of like was there kind of like guarding me, but I had to go.
Oh my Lord. Okay. I mean, it's just, it's a fact. It's what you got to do. You can't go, yeah, you I can't mean, go yeah, 7 months without doing it.
No. Yeah. I mean, it's yeah.
It's funny.
They say that you're really not a through hiker until you poop your pants. But thankfully, I never pooped my pants, but I guess that means I'm not a through hiker. I don't know.
Oh my God. Oh.
Terrible.
If that's what it is, I don't want to be it.
I know, right?
So we've kind of gone over minutia of the trip and the day to day. I think this would be, I would consider this is probably the most like Instagram of the questions I have here, the kind of the section. What were some highlights, locations, people, traditions? Like, what do we got?
Oh my gosh. So, I mean, traditions, the first thing that comes to mind is the half gallon challenge, which happens in Pine Grove Furnace in Pennsylvania. And so hikers there, they'll attempt to eat a half gallon of ice cream, which is wild to me. We attempted it, but we made sure to bring some vegan, dairy-free ice cream, and I failed miserably. And I could not finish it all, but that's like a really big tradition. One of my favorite trail towns actually was Bethel, Maine, which is probably one of the last trail towns that you'll get up to. It was just super beautiful. Great Barrington, Massachusetts was one of my favorite. I just loved going to all the trail towns. There probably wasn't any that I didn't go to. And so you come across them like every 3 to 4 days. And we almost always stayed in town just so we could enjoy the town that we were in. I mean, you work so hard on trail. It's like, I want to enjoy a hot bubble bath and a hot shower and a cold beer to kind of like relax from the crazy week that you just had. I mean, McAfee's Knob, as I said earlier, is beautiful. The White Mountains in New Hampshire were breathtaking. Franconia Ridge was one of my favorites. It was just insanely beautiful. let's see. I mean, Katahdin. Katahdin is the northern terminus of the Appalachian Trail. And I mean, it was just so emotional being there and seeing all your friends that have, you know, become your family up there, and everyone's crying and taking pictures and cheering for each other. And I mean, it's just an insanely beautiful moment for everybody.
I can't remember if you posted it or if I saw it on Julia's video. It was, what is the one where it looked where you're basically walking along the, like you're in the middle, you're in the ridge, and you're just, it's wide open and you see clouds. Where is that?
It's probably, I mean, up in the White Mountains or even in Southern Maine, it's almost open like that the whole entire time. They call it, you know, going above tree line. And so, you know, in like Southern Appalachia, there's not really any parts or like any moments where you're really above the tree line, mm-hmm. maybe Clingman's Dome in the Smokies, Smoky Mountains, but even that's like a man-made structure. It's like a concrete monument, Clingman's Dome. But I mean, everything up north, I mean, the Bigelows in Maine, the White Mountains, all of those are above that tree line. And so because it is above tree line, you get these insanely like breathtaking, almost like spiritual views going on. And they're just truly amazing. But then at the same token, that's where the really scary weather is. I mean, if you're up north and you're above tree line when scary weather is coming through, mm-hmm. I mean, it'll knock you right on your butt. I mean, we were up at the Saddlebacks up in Maine, and that we had like hail hitting us sideways and like 60 mile an hour winds, and there's no trees to block you. And so we had to like anchor ourselves with our trekking poles and kind of like hold on for dear life as these gusts were coming through. And then you just kind of like have to keep hiking or even like sprinting across because there's no trees. And so it'll just wipe you out.
Oh my Lord.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen the pictures and it just looks gorgeous. Like obviously most of it isn't like you're head down on the trail, but what would you say are the, you've probably mentioned a ton of them so far, but like, what would be like the top five? Like these are why you're walking the trail. Like these views are gorgeous.
So Virginia, the Triple Crown is consistent of Dragon's Tooth, McAfee's Knob, and Tinker Cliffs. Those are beautiful, amazing. I mean, just gorgeous. Anything in the White Mountains. I mean, Franconia Ridge, which is Mount Liberty, Mount Lafayette, and I forget the last one, but that whole range is just beautiful, and you can definitely do a day hike up there. The Bigelows in Maine is just beautiful. The Presidentials, I mean, going up to Mount Washington is amazing, and I mean, you can even drive your car up there now or take the little train that they have that goes up there. Oh, speaking of traditions, one of the traditions at Mount Washington is to moon the train that goes by.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So hikers will be like hiking along. Yeah. It's literally like, so they call us hiker trash. Like we're literally just like homeless, privileged people living in the woods, just like going crazy. It's like college every day out there.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. But I mean, anything. Yeah. In the White Mountains in Maine is just beautiful, but it's the hardest trail, but it's so rewarding.
Gotcha. Okay. Were there any, obviously, you met your boyfriend with the trail and you guys did it halfway. Was there any other people like substantial? You're like, this person's awesome. That person was awful.
We probably only had a couple like kind of creeps that we've met along the way, but it's really easy to kind of like, you know, get away from them. Or if you see them in town, which that happens a lot, you know, you might meet someone like in like the first month and then not even see them again until like Pennsylvania or like New Hampshire. And then, you know, you're like, oh my gosh, it's been like 3 months since I've seen you. Like, how have you been? And it's kind of like a, you know, like mm-hmm. a reunited. Yeah. And oh, definitely. I mean, I met some of my best friends out there, and I mean, I know everyone's busy right now, but I would love to keep in contact with all these people. And definitely like my day one trail family that I met out there were just so substantial in my entire journey, and just following them on social media. Cause if we would get like about a week or two apart, like if I was ahead or they were ahead, then we would kind of like still keep in contact to kind of see like, what are the trail conditions up top, or, you know, what should we do when we get to that town? I just saw you were there, and, you know, try out this buffet and don't go to that one. That one's gross. And just stuff like that.
Okay. So it's like a very unique. It's like basically you just have your own little like 6 month family.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, especially in that first 100 miles, everything was so brand new to everyone. And, you know, in that first 100, you cross your first state line. So you get through Georgia and then you enter in North Carolina. And that state crossing probably felt the best to me out of all 14, because it just felt like, holy shit, we're doing this. Like, we are really out here and maybe we actually can do this. Like, we've already done, I think at that time it's 78 miles and you're like, oh my gosh, I think I can do this. And then you hit your first 100 and you're like, wow, like I really can. And then you look around at the people next to you and you're like, yeah, I want them to succeed. And I know that they want me to succeed. And it's like this kind of unspoken bond that like, you know, that they're going to have your back.
Absolutely. Was there anybody that, you know, was there to through hike and that just, they just couldn't make it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, sadly, a couple people, I think maybe three or four in the group of like 10 or 12 that I met in that first 100, they ended up getting off. But I mean, I feel like people who really are out there and they say, I'm going to do this, you know, they have done their homework and they've done other section hikes, or they have, you know, researched and they've done all their gear testing and they're out there and they've saved enough money and they're like really ready to crush it and they're really ready to go. But I mean, it's like saying, yeah, I'm going to do a marathon. And then like you have a marathon plan the next day, like, you know, that success rate is not really going to work. You know that you're probably not ready to go out and do it. So I feel like if someone says like, yes, I'm ready, I'm going to go out there and do it, and like they put their head down and they actually do it, you know, hopefully they will be dedicated enough to complete it. But you know, I feel like the biggest thing of why people don't successfully complete a through hike is honestly because of money, and because they might party too hard in the beginning and they spend way too much money. You know, the first big town that I think a lot of people take a lot of breaks, even sometimes like a week or 2 weeks they stay in this town, is Gatlinburg of Tennessee. You know, they're halfway through the Smokies, they get into Gatlinburg and it is such a tourist trap, and they just get stuck there and they spend thousands of dollars and then they get back on trail and they're like, oh crap, I can't keep going, and then they go home.
It really is college. You just get to spring break, blow all your money, and realize you can't finish college.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, you really have to keep going. I mean, I met a couple people who, even entering the 100-mile wilderness, that is basically your last 100 miles. So you've done 2,000, you know, 93 miles, and you're doing those last 100. And some people are like, oh my gosh, I don't even know if I can keep going. I have literally $200 in my bank account and that's all I have. And they have to make it work in order to, you know, get the resupply that they need, because in that 100 miles, you have to have all of your supplies with you. You have to have all of your food for that entire stretch in order to make it to Katahdin.
Wow. Was there like, I know this is backtracking now, but like how much of, are you having to have for resupply? Like how often are you resupplying?
Probably every 3 to 4 days, sometimes maybe more, sometimes every like 5, but it really, you kind of just look ahead and you see, okay, I know in 60 or 70 miles, there's another town. Okay, let me divide that by 5 days. Okay, that might 15 miles a day. No, I don't want to do that many. Let me look at another town that might be closer. And you kind of just like, you honestly just figure it out. I mean, I think that was one of my biggest worries when it came to through hiking was, oh my gosh, how am I going to plan for 2,000 miles of food? Yeah. And I would like try to look at all these towns and try to do all the math. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is a damn headache. And it's like, you can't plan a week ahead. You can't plan even 5 days ahead. Sometimes you kind of just have to like pack a little bit more until you really get it down and really see how many calories you're consuming, and just kind of take every day and just be patient and just kind of go with the flow every day.
Absolutely. Okay. So yeah, it's, I'm hearing all this and I'm realizing I'm going to have to do more homework. So I think this is a question this is a question I don't think I've seen asked enough. So I wanted to kind of get your take. What was it? What's the experience re-entering society?
Oh man, I feel like I could write a book about it. I feel like a lot of people don't really talk about it either. I mean, you hear this term post-trail depression that gets like thrown around and everyone's like, okay, well, what is it? What does it entail? And I don't know if I would call it a depression, more so like a just kind of like buzzkill. It's really just like a post-trail buzzkill. You know, you're coming off of this high and your dopamine and your serotonin, all your neurotransmitters and your hormones are kind of like all over the place. You're basically all out of whack because you're depleted, you're tired, but yet you're on this high of, you know, just doing this amazing journey. And then you come back home and you're just like, well, what's next? And then you're like, okay, well, I need to make some money back. And so, you know, you kind of like put in your applications, maybe if you don't have anything lined up already, and you kind of get back into the workflow, and that might not be super fulfilling anymore, because when you come back home, it's like nothing feels like fulfilling anymore, because you were just riding this high for 7 months and riding this high of like, you're making these goals and you're, you know, accomplishing this task every single day in order to paint the big picture of like, I walked from Georgia to Maine. And in real life, it's not like that. It's just kind of routine, and you just kind of, you know, do what you need to do. And it's a lot more structured, because it has to be. You have bills to pay, and you have a family to feed, and you have pets to take care of, and a car to drive. And it's so much more tasks that you have to do. And I think if you don't start thinking about these things probably a month before you finish, you will have a really crazy awakening. And I mean, I feel like my biggest thing right now is my friends and family don't really know how to ask me about this huge accomplishment, and they don't know really what it means to have done this, because they haven't done it themselves. And so that disconnect between people who were super close in your life beforehand might not be as close anymore. And I think that's the biggest thing for me personally right now, is that disconnect between friends and family that just really don't understand what I went through.
Is it more so like they just like, hey, why can't you just pick up things where you left off? Or
I would say definitely kind of like that. I mean, especially because me personally, I'm a very like driven, goal oriented person. And so they're like, okay, well, yeah, just think of another goal. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, that's not that easy. Like, I'm tired. Like, I kind of need to relax from this whole thing that I just did, and I need like a month just to recoup from that.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're like, well, what do you mean? Like, that's not like you. Normally you're go, go, go. And I'm like, yeah, but I've changed. I've changed as a person. Because if you don't change while doing a 6 month journey, then like, did you even do it? Like, what's the reason for going out there? You know, everyone is not perfect. And so you learn about your flaws when you're out there. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, I mean, I'm just a completely different person now. And yeah, I mean, it's hard to kind of like pick right back up where you left off, because maybe where you left off is really not where you want to be anymore.
That's so true. That's something I didn't even think about. It's like, you know, mm-hmm. especially if like for yourself, you weren't, you know, engaging with the news and all this nonsense that's going on all over the place. And it's like, I can definitely see where you come back and it's like, what you find important has changed.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really kind of shocking. And I think that's where the quote unquote depression lies, is because this like loss of sense of self is kind of gone. Yeah. Because then it's like, for me personally, it's like, I am a through hiker. I am a bodybuilder. I am a cyclist. I am a runner, an ultra marathoner. And it's like, I don't identify as one certain thing. And a lot of people out there who have through hiked, like their whole identity now is through hiker. And out in the real world, people don't appreciate that. They don't understand what that means. Like, they don't see the nitty gritty of the shit that we go through every single day. And the fact that we've come out of it is truly insane. And it's like, people wear that one single hat of like, I am a through hiker. And I'm sorry, but like, being a through hiker, unless you're maybe Julia or Jessica Mills or Darwin, like, that doesn't pay the bills. And so you have to learn how to take off that hat. And so, you know, it's hard. It's kind of like an imposter syndrome type deal.
Wow. Let me tell you what, you just stuck a fork in my next question. So I'm not going to ask that. I was honestly going to, because maybe this is one thing. It's like, I was like, oh, you accomplished this. What is next? But then kind of hearing this, it's like, maybe there doesn't have to be anything huge next. Like, you did it. Yeah. That is a huge accomplishment. There doesn't need to be a sequel.
Yeah. It's, I mean, a lot of people think, okay, since you do the Appalachian Trail, it's like you're going to go be a triple crowner, which means you do the three, you know, staple trails in the country, which are the Appalachian Trail, the Continental Divide Trail, and the Pacific Crest Trail. And do I have hopes of being a triple crowner? Like, maybe, maybe not. It's not like that was the goal. The goal was to do the AT. And I mean, to do the PCT, like, that would be amazing. But right now actually is the time when people are putting in their permits to do the PCT. And, you know, you cannot do the trail unless you have a permit. So it's very highly competitive. Mm-hmm. And so I see a lot of my, you know, peers and my trail family who are like, okay, yep, I'm doing the PCT. And I'm like, you know, why don't you not? Like, let's embrace and be very happy for the fact that we did 2,193 miles across the country. Like, that should be enough right now.
Yeah.
But I mean, to answer your question, I mean, again, I am a very goal-oriented person. So, I mean, I do have another trail that I plan on doing. It's definitely not 2,000 miles. It's anywhere between 800 to 1,000, and it's called the Florida Trail. So it ranges from the Big Cypress area down south in Florida up to Fort Pickens, kind of a little bit more west than like Eglin Air Force Base in Florida. Yeah. So I do plan on doing the Florida Trail next year.
Have you heard about the Mountain to Sea Trail here in the NC?
Yes. Yeah, I have. So yeah, I do live in North Carolina now. I'm in Asheville, and there is a section that literally is like 5 minutes away from our place here. I think it's like section or segment three, I think.
Yeah. That one's really hit my radar. Cause I was like, I was like, there's no way I can quit my job right now. But if I could section hike the mountain to sea, do that over the span of like 2 years, like take trips here and there, I think that would be really cool. I think, what is it, like 300-400 miles?
So the mountains to sea, I think I did just Google it the other day, but I'm sure like trail closures and everything like play a role. I think it actually is closer to 1,000.
Okay, well, I'm off.
Well, I mean, there is, I mean, again, you could do sections. So it's like my advice for anyone like looking into like backpacking or doing something like this, you know, is to look up trails in your area and start just with like day hikes. And then it's like, okay, once you kind of get like your gear down, because it's an expensive hobby. It really, really is. It's kind of like doing a triathlon or like getting really into like cycling. You have to kind of like get the gear. And so once you get the gear, then look at doing like one night overnight, then look at doing like two and then three, and then kind of, you know, work your way up. But I mean, if you were to ask me now, what's the best way to do a trail? I would 100% say just to section hike it. You know, work your job, get your money. That way you don't have to quit. That way you don't have this weird reintegration into life. And, you know, section hike it. And you can find as much joy in section hiking as you potentially would for through hiking.
I get you reap all the benefits.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you get to see the same beautiful places, and I would argue that you get to see them in better conditions, because you can pick and choose when you want to do it. You know, there were days where, you know, there's a really beautiful spot out here by us in North Carolina, Big Bald and Max Patch. And both of those days when I went over this like iconic view, it was hailing and rainy, and I had to sprint across Max Patch because there was lightning, and being a big open bald like that, being the tallest thing, you're going to get struck by lightning. So I had to like run at full speed to get over this, you know, Max Patch. And if I were to just go day hike it right now, I'm not going to go out when it's lightning. I'm going to wait for a nice clear day, and then I'm going to reap the benefits of seeing the view.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, Jessica, this has been an absolute, I'm in love with this conversation just because it's answered all of my, is there anything that I've like missed or anything that you want to kind of discuss?
I would just say for someone thinking like, oh my gosh, that's such a long journey, you know, I would just say you would just have to break it up every day, you know, you can't really look at, wow, I'm out here for 6 months. You know, you, wow, I have 2,000 miles to do. Or even if, you know, there's a runner out there or someone who is getting new into working out, you know, oh my gosh, I don't know if I can go to the gym 7 days a week. You know, you can't think of it like that. You have to think about what can I do today that's going to get me to where I want to be tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And you just do the small little goals every single day to kind of like chip away. And then you're going to get better every time you do it. You know, you're not going to, you know, do a max personal record squat, you know, every single time. You know, you have to work on those basics and you have to build up those guidelines in order to be what you want to do. And so I guess I would say small goals every day to get to the bigger picture.
That's excellent life advice too.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, Jessica, where can everyone find your information? Where can they find you at?
All right. So you can get me on Instagram. It's at Taps and Trail, T-A-P-S and Trail. And on YouTube as well. I think if you just look up Taps and Trail or Jessica Poppe, P-O-P-P-E, you will find me on there.
Perfect. Well, Jessica, thank you so much for being on this podcast.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
You are most welcome. Guys, if you enjoyed this podcast, please share with a friend, subscribe and rate this podcast on Apple, follow us on Spotify. Everything that Jessica just said will be linked in the description. And guys, this podcast, as always, is the culmination of cool stories and the coolest people. This is Cooler Conversations. Later.